Anyone here like golden oldies music? Anyone here into golden oldies? I think old school's good school. I love old school, man. That's the only kind of music I know of there is. But hey, we're going to do a little music trivia this morning, okay? I came across a golden oldies song this past week. And I'm going to read just the first line of the song and see if you recognize what the song is. And if you recognize the song, you think you recognize the song, raise your hand and I'll call on you and see if you guess it right or not. If you don't, I'll tell you, and then we'll just keep reading the words, okay? All right. Now, some people are going to have an advantage over this on this song more than Fred, okay? Everybody here is going to have an advantage over this song more than you, Fred, but you can hang with us, man. All right, first line. And now the end is near, and so I face the final curtain.
My way.
Brent, I didn't call on you, but you raised your hand. Okay, anyone else's hand up? Okay, Brent, I think his hand went up first. What's the title of the song, Brent?
My Way.
My Way. My Way. Who sings the song?
Sinatra.
Frank Sinatra. All right, that was a classic back in 1969. Yeah, I never heard it, Violet. Yeah, I know you don't know it. Before you all were born, back in 1969, it was released, hit top 27 on the 100 chart. But big song by Frank Sinatra, you know, it goes, and now the end is near, and so I face the final curtain. My friend, I'll say it clear, I'll state my case of which I'm certain. I've lived a life that's full, I've traveled each and every highway, but more, much more than this, what? I did it my way. The last verse. Regrets, I've had a few, but then again, too few to mention. I did what I had to do and saw it through without exemption. I planned each charted course, each careful step along the byway, and more, much more than this, I did it my way. Man, this really is appealing, isn't it? You know, it just kind of resonates with our human spirit. That every step we take the step that my way. Every path that we chart, we chart the course my way. So that when we come to the end of our lives, whatever we have done or not done, whatever we did or failed to do, at least we can own our lives and we can say that we lived our lives and we did our lives totally our way. I planned each charted course, each careful step along the byway. And more, much more than this, I did it my way. But this is a problem because it creates a really great tension between the human and the holy, between the creator and the creation. Because everything inside of us screams, I'm going to do life my way. I'm going to live life my way. I'm going to get everything, go for the gusto and live to the edge of life my way. But then God, the creator, comes into our lives and says, hey, I'm the one that gave you life. And if you want to experience and really to know the life that I gave you, you have to do life my way. And this tension becomes very obvious, we'll see in our Bible story this morning, in the life of a man named Naaman. All right, the year's around 967 B.C. to about 550 B.C. They're not exactly sure where in that time frame. The area is around the Middle East, most specifically near Israel. And the world at that time was in great flux because there were three mighty nations, great powers, and they were warring constantly, vying for the number one top position. And into this context, we read a story about a man named Naaman and how he wanted to do life his way. Book of 2 Kings in the Old Testament, chapter 5, verse 1. Now Naaman was commander of the army of the king of Aram, or Syria. He was a great man in the sight of his master and highly regarded because through him the Lord had given victory to Aram. He was a valiant soldier, but he had leprosy. All right. He was a highly decorated, battle-tested, four-star general of the army of Syria. And Syria, along with Assyria, along with Babylon, were the three greatest nations on the face of the earth at that time, warring for dominance across the world scene. And he was the commander of one of the largest armies at that time. And as commander, he was great in the eyes of his master, the king of Syria. Naaman commanded the army, and the only person that commanded Naaman was the king. And the king thought Naaman was awesome. His master looked at him, and he thought, Naaman, you're doing a great work. You're my commander. You're my man. Keep doing it just like you've done it. And so Naaman is great in the sight of his master, the king, but also he was highly respected. So not only did the king like Naaman, all the people thought Naaman was great as well. They highly respected him. They looked up to Naaman. He was their deliverer. He was their commander because as we see that the Lord had given him victory to Aram, to Syria. They would go out to battle and Naaman would come back with the soldiers victorious in battle. And that increased his credibility with the king and increased the respect from the people. But the reason we find that he had all the victories that he had was because the Lord had given him victory through him to Aram, to Syria. The Lord had given victory through Naaman to Syria. You know, a lot of times as Christians, we get stuck in the idea that God only blesses us Christians, right? You know, we're Christians, only God can bless Christians. And we get stuck in this, well, we're the only people that God can bless. Well, you know what? Here, newsflash. God can bless anybody he wants, whenever he wants, however he wants. You know, Naaman is winning all these battles, and he has no idea why he's winning the battles he's winning. He's winning the battles because God is blessing him. An unbeliever. And blessing this nation through Naaman, an unbelieving nation. You see, God can bless who he wants, how he wants, where he wants, when he wants to accomplish the purposes that God has for his blessings. And so Naaman, the king loved him. The people respected him. God was for him. He had the best life ever. But he had leprosy. You see, every human being has that but in their lives. Every human being, there's something in their lives that impacts their present that has just, no matter how much good, it is always part of who they are. You know, and it may be external. It may be that it's a sickness. It may be something that has happened to them. Maybe a loss, something they're grieving about. Life is great for them, but it may not be an external thing. It could be an internal thing. That they're depressed. They're sad. They're lonely. Something's happened to them. We look at their lives, and their lives seem so awesome. They seem like they've got it so all together, but we were not there in their lives when their lives were hard. And so it could be an external thing. It could be an internal thing, or it could be a self-consuming thing. They seem to be so self-confident and self-fulfilled and self-aware. But they're so full of self that they don't have any room in their lives, space for relationships with anyone else. And we are all Naamans. We all have this but in our lives, this thing that keeps life from being perfect, the best life ever. And when the Naamans realize they have a need to be healed, to be helped, they begin to seek out help. But they may not always know the right way to go about it. In verse 2, so now bands from Aram had gone out and had taken captive a young girl from Israel. And she served Naaman's wife. She said to her mistress, if only my master would see the prophet who is in Samaria, he would cure him of his leprosy. So Naaman went to his master and told him what the girl from Israel had said. By all means go, the king of Aram replied. I will send a letter to the king of Israel. So Naaman left, taking with him 10 talents of silver, 6,000 shekels of gold, and 10 sets of clothing. The letter that he took to the king of Israel read, with this letter I'm sending my servant Naaman to you so that you may cure him of his leprosy. And as soon as the king of Israel read the letter, he tore his robes and said, am I God? Can I kill and bring back to life? Why does this fellow send someone to me to be cured of his leprosy? See how he's trying to pick a quarrel with me. All right, this young girl tells Naaman's wife, hey, there's a prophet, there's a man of God in Israel, and his name's Elijah, we'll find out. He can cure Naaman of his leprosy. So Naaman gets excited. I would get excited. Someone who can cure me of an incurable disease, man, I'm there. So he goes to his king to get a letter to take to the king of Israel. Right. Well, that makes sense. Israel and Syria, they're not the best of friends. In fact, they're at war. So if Naaman went with all his soldiers to Elijah's home, the prophet's home, and just rode up there, it would be seen as an act of war and engage in battle. And so that wouldn't be cool. So Naaman, what he does, it makes sense. He doesn't want to fight. He just wants to be cured. So he takes a peaceful delegation to go to the king of Israel and gives the king of Israel a letter. To say, cure him. I'm sending Naaman to you so that you may cure him of his leprosy. Now, Israel's king can't cure anyone of anything. And so he has a meltdown, rips his robes apart, has a no good, very bad day, and just falls to pieces. You know, and how strange that the king, Naaman's king, would send that letter to the king of Israel. You know, king, you heal Naaman of his disease. When it seems like the letter should read, from the king of Naaman to the king of Israel, could you have your prophet Elijah cure Naaman of his disease? You know, Naaman's king wanted Naaman healed. He just did not know the best way to go about it, but he did the best he could with what he had. I was counseling recently with a young man. He and his wife were having significant marital issues. And they had children, were involved. And he began laying out to me all the stuff that had happened and all the things that had taken place. And it was just a whole bunch of stuff. Just a whole bunch of stuff. And as I'm listening, as I'm praying for him, as we're talking, once he finished and we dialogued back and forth, I said, hey, look, you know, you and your wife cannot fix what is broken here. The pain is too great. The scars are too deep. The hurt is too profound. Too much has happened to tear your relationship apart. You are just too close to the situation to know how to make things better with your wife. I said, I've done a lot of counseling, and Where your relationship at, there's the one hope, the hope that you can have is to go see a marriage counselor. Someone who's trained to deal with your issues. Someone who will understand what you are doing. Someone who's far removed from the situation, who can bring you insights and give you things to do to help bring back healing to the relationship. You are unable to fix what is broken here. And Naaman was unable to fix what was broken in his life. He had leprosy, and his king was unable to fix what was broken in his life. And so he sends him to a king and asks this other king of Israel to heal him. And when he should have been asking Elijah, the God, the man of God, to heal him. And you know what? There are a lot of people in our world who are able to fix what is broken in their lives. And they realize the brokenness, they realize the hurt, the pain, they realize there's something more that they can't wrap their arms around, and so they seek out this person and try to do it that way and try to read this book and bring this about. And they try all these different things the best that they can to fix what is broken, but they just don't know how to best go about it. And Naaman needed healing. They just didn't know how to get him healed. Verse 8. And we read, when Elijah, the man of God, heard that the king of Israel had torn his robes, he sent him this message, "Why have you torn your robes? Make the man come to me, and he will know that there is a prophet in Israel." Now, Elijah is one feisty. Elijah is one feisty dude. Man, he has got some guts. Notice he says, "Make the man." All right, this is Naaman, the commander of one of the largest armies in the world. He didn't say, ask Naaman if he would consider, or ask Naaman if he would pretty please think about, or ask Naaman to see if he has time in his busy schedule to come see me. He said, make the man. All right, let's get what's going on here. Elisha, a lowly prophet of God. Naaman, commander of one of the largest armies in the world. Elisha, who has one assistant. Naaman, who has thousands and thousands of soldiers under his command. Elisha, who has no power except for what he gets from God, and Naaman, who has the power to destroy cities and nations. And Elijah basically says, hey, tell that Syrian dude to bring his bling and his clothes and come see me. And maybe we can do something here. Naaman wanted to be cured of his leprosy. But God wanted Naaman to be cured of his unbelief. The reason that God blesses any of us is not for the sake of just blessing us, but God blesses people for the sake of belief. You know, Jesus himself said when he was ministering on the earth, he said, for the Lord causes his sun to shine on the evil and the good, and he sends his rain on the righteous and on the unrighteous. And the reason God sends His Son on the evil and on the good, so that both the evil and the good will know the God who owns the Son. And the reason that God sends His rain on the unrighteous and the righteous is so that both the unrighteous and the righteous will know the God who is the only one that can quench their thirst. And the reason that you have the blessings you have, and that you've been given the life that you've been given, is because the God creator of the universe so much loves you that He wants you to experience these blessings, and so that in the process of experiencing the blessings, you may come to know the God of all your blessings. So, Naaman went with his horses and chariots and stopped at the door of Elisha's house. And Elisha sent a messenger to say to him, "Go wash yourself 7 times in the Jordan, and your flesh will be restored and you will be cleansed." But Naaman went away angry and said, "I thought he would surely come out to me and stand and call on the name of his God before me and wave his hand over the spot and cure me of my leprosy. Are not Abana and Pharpar, the rivers of Damascus, greater than any of the waters of Israel? Couldn't I wash in them and be cleansed?" So he turned and went off in a rage. Naaman needed healing. He just did not go the best way to get the healing done. So he decided that he wanted to be healed his way. But Naaman's servants went to him and said, "My father, if the prophet had told you to do some great thing, would you not have done it? How much more then when he tells you, 'Wash and be cleansed'?" Isn't that amazing? Naaman's servants have more wisdom than Naaman does. And I believe it's because his servants had no expectations. They were servants. No one would ever come out of their home to greet them because they were servants. No one would come to them and stand before them and call upon the name of the Lord because they were servants. No one would wave their hand over them and cure them because they were servants. They had no expectations. They would just wanted their master Naaman killed, Naaman healed, and they didn't care how it came about. "My father, if the prophet had told you to do some great thing, would you not have done it?" Oh, well, yeah. How much more? How much simpler? How much easier than when he tells you, "Wash and be cleansed"? So he went down and dipped himself in the river 7 times as the man of God had told him, and his flesh was restored, and he became clean like that of a young boy. Then Naaman and all his attendants went back to the man of God. He, Naaman, stood before him, Elijah, and said, "Now I know that there is no God in all the world except in Israel." Naaman wanted to be healed his way, and he thought that Elijah should come out to him and stand before him. But now, Naaman, healed and humbled, stood before Elijah. Now, how I know that there is no God in all the world except in Israel. Naaman was healed because he was healed God's way. The only way that we can experience the life that God has for us is that if we live life God's way. And the life that God brings to us comes through His Son, Jesus, who said, "I am the way." And then He went to the cross to make a way. And the way that we begin to live the life that God has for us is we say, "Jesus, I give you my life. Jesus, I give you my life." In that moment that we give Jesus our lives, we begin to experience the life that God has for us. And we are healed because we decide to do it God's way and not our way. And today in your life, maybe you're ready to begin to say, "Jesus, I give you my life. Jesus, I give you my life." And then begin to live. Dear God, we've gathered in this space today with the hope and the prayer that whoever came through our doors would know you better. And Lord, each one of us is making a decision to live life our way, the way Naaman originally wanted to live his life, or to live life your way. And it's a great tension. But the only way that we can realize the life that you have for us and know the life you have for us and live out of the life you have for us is to do life your way through Jesus Christ, who is the way. Dear God, help us to become more like Naaman and know that there is no God except you. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.